Welcome to That One Record. I'm Kyle Crichet, and on this show, we will look at one record in a band's discography. Sometimes that will be the fan favorite, sometimes that will be the most maligned, but whatever it is, it will be an important moment in a band's legacy. We're going to go through the recording process, the writing process, who worked on it, why, what labels were involved, who put it out, how it did, touring, every single aspect to that record, and figure out why it became such an important or pivotal piece to a band's legacy and discography. For the debut episode of That One Record, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Tim Kasher of the band Cursive to talk about 2009's Mama, I'm Swollen. While Domestika or The Ugly Organ may seem like the obvious choice, I think there's a more interesting one here. Domestika may have been an early trademark of Saddle Creek, and The Ugly Organ being this huge breakthrough for the label in the peak era of CD sales. I think taking a look at 2009's Mama, I'm Swollen will show a band that's really done it all, and a band that came to a point where they just had to be comfortable with themselves, their songwriting, and where they were at as musicians. I have an implicit bias with this record. It was a huge part of my Cursive fandom. It came along in my late teens, was very influential for me, and I always thought maybe it was just me who really had this album near the top of his Cursive discography ranking, until I saw an article on Noisy where Tim himself actually ranked this record as, in his personal opinion, the best Cursive record. So I thought maybe I'm not crazy here. If the band sees it as their best, I see it as their best, maybe there's others out there who also see this album as one of the best in the Cursive discography. And if they don't, maybe this will be the thing that pushes them over the edge. Sometimes this happens with these bands that have been around for so long. It's hard to delve into these seemingly monstrous discographies. Where do you start? You hit the big ones that are popular online. You're sifting through what the old heads think is the best versus what the newer fans think is the best. It's tough. And sometimes you lose track of a sort of a middle of the era record like Mama, I'm Swollen is. The album is dark, it's moody, it's brooding, but it's still mature. It has a depth that some of the other records lack. It has these through lines and narratives that permeate throughout the whole record. So if you really haven't given this one a chance, I can't recommend it enough. We're going to jump right in with Tim trying to recall when and where exactly they started the whole process that eventually became Mama, I'm Swollen.
And I just wanted to kind of take Cursive back to around that time. So you're coming off of a run of Domestika, The Ugly Organ, Album of the Year, Happy Hollow, and then you're getting ready to record, I believe it was summer of 2008.
Probably. It seems about right.
And then you did it at Arc Studios again with AJ Mogus, who seems to be a collaborator throughout all your projects.
Yeah, at ARC, we worked, so that it was actually kind of a return to AJ, who, if I'm going to get this right, I'm pretty sure I'm getting this right, who we hadn't worked with maybe since, and actually done a full record with since Domestika. Although he may have done the Burst and Bloom EP, but I bet not. I bet that was probably Mike. So Mike and AJ are brothers. AJ is the older brother. Mike's younger. And so when we first met them, and they were doing recording out of their basement in Lincoln, Nebraska, and AJ was really the one who, they used to live in North Platte, and they really got into sound audio engineering out there. And so when we first started doing Cursive records with them, AJ was always the engineer because Mike was younger and was just a bit younger. I mean, not a bit younger, but I mean, we were all young. And so he was still kind of cutting his teeth, figuring shit out. So it was The Ugly Organ where Mike kind of stepped in and started doing stuff. And so we did Ugly Oregon and Happy Hollow, and I did Album of the Year with Mike. Help Wanted Nights, which is a Good Life record after Happy Hollow. Man, I'd have to check the liner notes. I actually kind of don't remember. I have a hunch that may have been with AJ, though.
And any time around this, did it ever come up when the band was planning to do a record, like, hey, do we want to travel and record somewhere else? Or is it always, we're going to stay here, we kind of do everything in-house here?
Not until I Am Gemini. So by the time we got to Mama, I'm Swollen, we still just weren't feeling the need to go anywhere else, which is a fun and cool thing to do. It's also just throwing a lot of money at, you know, like, you don't really have to spend that much money. Although it was funny. I know we're talking about Mama, I'm Swollen, but we spent a lot of money and unnecessary money on Happy Hollow, but it was just because, I'm not being very sheepish here, but there was just so much money after Ugly Oregon that we, it just like really was like, it was like our indie rock version, our small indie running our own business version of you know, like having money to burn, you know, like, whereas, so I'm trying to think of like, oh man, like I remember hearing stories about Korn, of all people, like Korn, and like the amount of like millions of dollars or something, like hundreds of thousands, maybe like a million something that they would spend at the studio. That was like our version, but it was actually just like a meager tens of thousands, which is like, well, like three times as much, you know, like, or twice as much, I should say, as, I mean, it does cost money to record an album. You have to spend something, especially if you're going to respect, you know, who you're working with, if you're working with professionals. But yeah, we spent too much on Happy Hollow.
Are you typically, by the time you get into the studio then for Mama, are you typically a band that does a few weeks of pre-production, or do you kind of just go in already kind of know what you're there to do and just lay down stuff for real?
Yeah, well, yeah, I've never been a much of a pre-production person. Probably more pre-production stuff, with solo albums I do, because they're, cause it's not a band, you know, I'm not like working a band together. So there'll be, pre-production in the sense that, I'll send demos of what we're going to record, and then I'll meet up with the different musicians the week of, you know. But for something like Cursive, I mean, we're all spending time with those songs together for the year and a half, 2 years, whatever, however long we might be working on the record off and on, you know. so yeah, for something like that, for something like Mama, I'm Swollen, it would have been us, you know, doing demos and stuff like that. I don't know if you get that counts as pre-production. I don't feel like it does, but.
And so when you guys start working on an album, are you bringing in skeletons? Are you bringing in kind of fully finished structures and then other members start adding to them, or do you write together?
I was going to say that maybe Cursive and Good Life are a bit different, but actually, as I'm thinking about it, they're maybe a bit similar. So sticking with Cursive for this description, you know, Matt McGinn, our bass player, and Cornbread Compton, who was our drummer for Mama Swollen, but let's just say the drummer in general, and myself, and then like we would all have our stuff pretty much like almost completely dialed in. So, you know, like working up to a studio, it's really just repetition at that point, I would say, especially for bass and drums. You know, maybe if the said drummer were to be beside me right now, maybe they'd say like, you know, I bet there's still like a little bit of looseness and a little bit of like, you know, improv to this fills, drum fills and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know where the drum fills are going to be. And I mean, like everything's pretty laid in. I want to say that McGinn's like pretty ready with his bass lines, and I'm pretty ready with my guitar parts. But now you get to Teddy, who's our other guitar player, and his preference is really to get the music. So he's working on his guitars all the time, like through the entire practice sessions. He's always like noodling away, working on what he wants to do. But his preference is for years now has really been to take the recordings, like the final recordings of like, this is what the core of the band is doing. And then he goes off on his own and that's when he really works hard on finalizing his guitars. So that's a bit different. I see my vocal, cause I also, I spend most of the post studio time working on vocals. And so I see both vocals and Ted's guitar as kind of being similar in the sense that there's still a lot of work to do with them after the studio.
Yeah. And do you guys go in with a larger batch of songs and reduce after, or do you kind of have like with Mama, you had these songs, these were going to be the record?
It seems like more obsessive compulsive about this as the years have gone by, where it feels like every album I do now, I have the burden of even more and more songs. Like I'm just like always writing more and more songs. Some kind of fear that I have that I'm not making the greatest album that I possibly can at that given moment. And so I'm honestly at a point now where I feel like I'm writing maybe 50 plus fucking songs for a 10 song record or something like that. And that's just getting excessive. But I don't know. That's just where I am right now, I guess, with working on records. And so that was growing post Ugly Organ, post album of the year, I'm going to say. So by Happy Hollow, I remember we went in, and that's why some of the reason why we took so long on that record and why it took so long is that was the learning curve for us, or learning process, because we went in with like, I don't know, maybe like 24 songs or something like that. And I'm telling you in the audience right now, I just think that's too many songs to take into the studio. That's great. I mean, it's great to have a ton of songs in the practice space. It's great to have a ton of songs at home. So when I say like that, I'm like upwards of 50 songs that I'll write for an album, the band that I'm working with is only going to hear, maybe 25 of those songs. And they might only hear 20, but they'll probably hear around 20. So, cause I'm doing my own editing before I even bring the songs in. So Happy Hollow, we had too many songs and we recognized that was a problem because it was just management. It was a management issue, like mental management of just like, of trying to juggle all of these songs. I'm realizing that we were giving too much focus to too many songs that we kind of knew weren't going to make the record. So why are we spending so much? Why are we wasting time? Valuable time. We should focus on what you really know is the best stuff. But anyway, so Mama and Swollen, I don't remember, but I want to say for sure, but I do remember some B-sides from that I quite liked. And there was probably, more like 17 songs, I want to say, or something like that.
And how much do you personally in your head go, hey, I don't think this is maybe my best song, versus how much do you lean on the other guys to be like, hey, maybe this one isn't the one worth spending the time on?
That is increasingly becoming like, this kind of goes back, it goes into my what's feeling like my OCD issues. I don't think of myself as an OCD person, but I am not a good, I have really strong opinions about what songs are good and which aren't, but my opinions don't align with others very well at all. And that's tricky for me. So as a result, I've over the years, I've tried to get more and more open-minded, because I can be swayed. I mean, I can be influenced. Why not? Why wouldn't I be influenced by my friends? I'm definitely, my bandmates are some of my closest friends. So of course I'm going to be influenced by them if they really love a certain this or that. And I'm also influenced by when we, when we go to a wider pool of people. That's like why I want people to hear demos and hear early ideas of songs, because I'm influenced by that too. If nobody is responding to certain songs, that affects me, and it affects me adversely the way I feel about that song. And if there's a song that I think is a stinker and everybody loves it, that totally affects me. And it's not just me being like, oh, well, this song sucks, but I'm going to release it because it's going to be commercially viable. It's not that at all. It really is that I get influence. It's just influence, you know? It's like I start hearing it through a different lens. This isn't always the case. Sometimes I certainly put my foot down about certain things. I feel confident about certain songs that shouldn't make it. And so the bands I work with, they also recognize that as an issue, I'd say, that sometimes I just won't really budge on that, because I just truly believe, like, I can't, even if everybody likes this given song, it doesn't matter, because I will never come around to accepting it. You know? So it's... Yeah.
Does this mentality also apply to albums as a whole? Like, as you now can reflect on a pretty large catalog and be like, you know, this one's a fan favorite, but I don't get it. Or this, people don't seemingly give the same respect to this album that I do.
Yeah. I mean, I have those kinds of thoughts all over the place, all over my catalogs. And I think that's I think that's probably really normal for probably any, for most lines of work, even if you're kind of cataloging things that have, you know, like that kind of wax and wane in their acceptance of from others, from a community. I don't have any albums that I disregard. I definitely struggled for a while with, I've always kind of had a soft spot or like an acceptance of Domestika, but I did struggle with like why Ugly Oregon stuck out so much more than any other work that I've done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I listened to it recently and I found it funny. Well, I don't know if funny is the right word. I found it interesting that and I don't know, I don't want to come off as denigrating. I know that a lot of people are Ugly Oregon fans, and I certainly am a fan. Let me cut to the chase. I'm a fan of the record, and that's what I'm learning more and more as I'm like trying to come as I was listening to it the other month, which I haven't really done in quite a while. But it's really like, it's more commercial than I realized. So that was my takeaway from it. And so I was like, oh, okay. Actually, I kind of hear why this was probably a pretty successful record. There's songs like Recluse and Driftwood and, Sierra, and I mean, these songs are like, they're nice, they're catchy songs, but they're also, for what my impression of what I think Cursive is, my impression of Cursive is songs more like, excuse me, like Gentleman Caller or Butcher the Song or Red Handed Sleight of Hand. But you know, that's all, maybe people are listening to this and be like, oh, you know, that's, I agree, that's what we think of Cursive as well. It's a multifaceted genre of a band, I guess.
Yeah, and I think because it spans so long too, you kind of have these chunks where you've now kind of influenced almost different generations. Like for me personally, I came into Cursive around Happy Hollow. When that came out, I was 16, and that was like, I had a buddy at school who just was all about Cursive, and you know, he gave me this album. I was like, whoa, I never, you know. So, and I have a big soft spot for this album, Mama, I'm Swollen, because it was kind of around that time. You know, I was 18 when this came out, and I put it on the other day, and my now wife, girlfriend at the time, it was the first time she had heard it again in a while, and she was like, whoa, it took me right back to when we were dating, like, because we just played it nonstop. We listened to it all the time. But it's funny because as I've, you know, you find other people that are in cursive, you know, if it's someone a little bit older than me, they might be, you know, the ugly organ truthers. And then if there's someone a little bit older than them, they're the Domestika kind of pre-Domestika even type stuff. So I find that interesting with this album, looking at it in this catalog. It's like you can almost break the band up into these different eras. And kind of all of these little eras have these little stop and starts. Like if you just go by the Wikipedia, you know, there's multiple breakups of cursive or times when, you know, you just want to step away for a little bit. But the output is fairly consistent over time when you look at it. It's roughly every 3 years. So like for an album like this after Happy Hollow, do you write at all while you're touring, or are you just putting little tidbits together? And do you block off time to specifically write an album, or how did that work at that time?
So I don't write songs on while touring very much at all. I'll work on lyrics because I'll just be out walking around or staring at the van window or whatever. Some of my favorite times of the year is when I'm just writing songs for the next album. Because that suggests that I'm living at a fairly leisurely pace, which is nice. And so it's a great schedule. I have a nice breakfast and I have some coffee and I read news, and eventually I pick out a shitty movie to put on and to kind of stare blankly at while I play guitar, and I'll play guitar for hours and work on songs. And it's like, that's kind of my songwriting sessions are in between touring, and they're just relaxing and great. And it's really some of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. It's you mentioning even just putting the shitty movie on in the background. I know you're a big film guy. Like you directed, did you direct your own movie?
I directed,
with the solo album.
I did. I directed No Resolution.
Right.
I did a solo album called the same. Yeah.
How much does film influence your songwriting versus just other bands?
Well, probably a lot more than I realized, just because that kind of, you know, influence just kind of seeps in.
I asked specifically for this album because all throughout the lyric book is just the blood red sun keeps coming up, and it keeps being written down. It shows up in the songs, and it's in the artwork. Like it's just such a almost like a film like visual motif throughout the album that seemed to be, I don't know. It's like you have these visual lyrics, especially on this album. I felt like.
But Mom, I'm Swollen, as you're mentioning that, reminds me, it was very Cormac McCarthy influenced.
And oh, okay.
So it was less film at that point, and it was that I'd come across Cormac McCarthy as an author and was fairly getting obsessed with his work, and it just really it just stayed in my head, and I feel like I was like kind of living in Cormac McCarthy's world for a little while, the way you do when you're consuming literature, you know. And I was pretty aware. Even stuff like the blood red sun and stuff. I mean, it's kind of very like blood meridian, and his outlook is just so dark, and that's a lot of what My Mom's Swollen kind of ended up being.
Now, you guys often get pegged, and I think it varies to different degrees as kind of like a concept album band. Whereas I think, you know, you definitely have like I Am Gemini, which is like a pretty hard concept album front to back. Now this one, I think, kind of rides in the middle. Do you view Mama I'm Swollen as a concept record or just one kind of strong thematic record that just, you know, has a little bit of conceptual vibes, but that's just kind of where your head was at for all the writing?
I see it as a fairly heavily themed album, per kind of what we're just discussing. I do remember, though, that we had done Happy Hollow, and that was my most, at that point, I did, I guess, Album of the Year and Happy Hollow, and so I was like going pretty heavy into these pretty specifically or pretty heavily conceptualized records, more so than Domestika and Ugly Oregon. Ugly Oregon is the funny one to me because that's not really, it just, it's very loose in concept. I consider it a thematic record, but we tied everything, we tied everything together after the fact. And by tying all, we kind of recognized all these through lines in the songs that were unintentional. And then we kind of created that in the liner notes, and that gave off this greater impression of like a heavy of a greater concept, but it's really just more thematic. And so Happy Hollow is much more specifically like going at like a conceptualized record, and Album of the Year was. And so I felt the need to not be pigeonholed as this person who's always doing concept records. So with Mom, I'm Swollen, I tried to steer away from that. And what I ended up with was just another kind of conceptualized record that was just a lot looser in its concept. And I'm comfortable with that.
How involved are you in the album art? Do you have it kind of visually planned out throughout the writing process? Is it kind of a post thing, or do you just toss it to someone else and say, hey, this is kind of the idea?
It's really important to me. And so I'm definitely, very much a part of it. It really depends on the record, whether or not I have a solid visual idea or not. For Mama, I'm Swollen, I think that cover, if I'm remembering correctly, I think there was a conception of that for a decent amount of time before we actually, making it. There's a painting that I grew up with in my parents' house. And it's actually the album cover actually is the painting, but it's so vague. You can hardly, tell. It's almost more of a personal thing to me. So I can kind of see it when I look at it, but, you can't really quite tell, but the kind of imagery of the blood red sun and it being a yolk, and those are all just kind of ideas that kind of started kind of popping up. But Ted and I and Matt, we all spend a lot of time talking about these things and kind of trying to figure it out. Matt does a lot of he has more of a background in graphic design, so he does a lot of work on kind of pulling that stuff together.
Oh, okay, awesome. And now, so I think, is this the first album that you did without Clint on drums as
it
well?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, so I'm trying to establish the timeline. Did you record with one drummer and then tour with a different one right after?
We did. So we did the record with Cornbread, and we wrote the record. I'm sure we did some touring with Cornbread, and we definitely did some touring with Cornbread. And then we recorded the album with him in shortly after he left the band. And so we picked up Coley Simonson, who we ended up playing with for, you know, a few years, and did I'm Gemini with.
Yeah. Was there any kind of kinks to work out? You know, you record, you've been playing with one guy for a while, you record with another, you have to tour, or is it just, you know, these guys are such a high enough level that it's a smooth transition for band.
Yeah. We've been lucky as far as that's concerned. The drummers that we play with are far exceed us in skill. So we just try to keep up with them.
Do you remember specifically what influenced the album title and like when you came up with it?
I do remember that it's an album title that took a while to come up with. I love it when I know the album title, you know, early on. And it's not very often that that's the case. So what I'll do is I'll spend a lot of time sitting with the final songs and thinking about what they all mean. And I'll look for, I look for a title that I would consider to be like an umbrella title that could kind of cover some more or less cover all of the songs. And, so the idea of Mama, I'm Swollen was able to encapsulate, all of the songs as they were all, mostly I think of Mama, I'm Swollen as being in pain with, all of the vastness of the universe, I guess is maybe the specifically the way I see it, but I also recognize that it means kind of a lot of things, including I recognize that it has a sexual, you know, connotation as well.
Did you, and down to basically the lyric book and the insert in this, do you remember what this looks like inside? Is it your handwriting? It's kind of almost looks like scans of handwritten notes.
Yeah, it's on the paper plates. I know for What Have I Done.
Yeah, the last one's paper plate. There's different ones, but it kind of almost has a flow, like a conscious flow throughout. Like there's more lines and stuff than what's actually in the songs. It kind of almost reads like a story. You have kind of these gap fillers in between at the start of songs, and I don't know if these were lyrics you took out, or is this kind of how you just jot stuff down, how you work when you're in studio?
I had forgotten that I did that. Desire to want to kind of bind all the songs together and make an album kind of one complete concept, you know.
I was wondering if that's, are these just little Easter eggs you toss in, or is this actually, you know, your flow when you're writing?
Yeah, it's Easter eggs. That is very what I was mentioning, describing earlier about how Ugly Organ came together kind of after the we recognized thematically how all the songs were bound together. And then we kind of started filling in the cracks, so to speak, in the artwork. And that's the same thing with Mama, I'm Swollen. I'd forgotten that we had done that.
Yeah, I guess it's been, you know, 12 years now since this album came out. And when it comes to sequencing the album, is this a whole band endeavor? Do you all kind of sit down and say sequencing, I guess, and singles? How do you guys determine what's going to be?
So sequencing, it comes down to Matt, Ted, and I, who are the ones who are, we're kind of the three mainstays, I guess, since the year 2000. So, we kind of manage it together. So sequencing is very important to all three of us, but we managed to agree to come up to us to come up to some kind of conclusion that we can all be happy with. Singles sometimes are obvious and sometimes they're not. For this one, From the Hips was fairly obvious, and we knew it would be. So I think we led with that.
Yeah, I think I Couldn't Love You was the next one.
Uh-huh. And
was that kind of a harder decision to pick that one? Because you kind of had In the Now if you wanted to go in another banger direction, but I Couldn't Love You has a pretty wide spectrum of what the album does. It kind of hits everything.
Yeah, I'm gonna insult Couldn't Love You just a little bit. That I think that it's I do like the song, I mean, I stand by it, but it's a little bit more it sounds a little bit more like a single to me. And when songs sound a little too, actually, you know, I said From the Hips was an obvious single to us, but what I mean by that is that we it was clear to us that that was a song that was going to connect with people. It wasn't an obvious sounding single per se. Even oddly, I mean, even like our most successful song is The Recluse. And that's also not like I don't really know why that song's so successful. Actually, it's just not very much, doesn't come off much as a single, doesn't have a chorus or anything, you know. But Couldn't Love You very much has a chorus, and it's just kind of like runs in more of a, it's a little bit more straightforward for us. But that's fine. I like to do, you know, we haven't really got into this yet, but some of what Mama I'm Swollen was about for me and for us was, we're always finding ourselves trying to go in these odd and different directions, and kind of a lot of the point of Mama I'm Swollen was, what if the direction we go in is actually playing a little more straight and a little bit more standard, because that's uncommon. To do something a little bit more standard was actually not standard for us, and we found that to be compelling.
How much of that was Cornbread? Because I think specifically the drumming really changes on this. Like Clint had a very specific style, whereas this is just like, Cornbread will stand and bang when the song requires it, but he also backs off and, you know, instead of less technical and a little more just go.
Yeah, he's a real, I think of him as a really just like a great groove.
Meat and potatoes, yeah.
Yeah, a drummer that's like, and that's also his, that's intentionally his approach. And I was recognizing that as we were writing songs, I was like, oh, I'm really, as you're familiar with cursive, it's like I'm really trick-based. Like that's what I call them. It's like I love to litter a song with tricks, and that just because I just find that exciting. And I noticed that Cornbread was that was less compelling to him, and that he is more of a purist as a in the rhythm section, which is cool. You know, that's a cool. It's a different approach than I generally take. Roger, who's the drummer I play with in The Good Life. He's like that as well. He always obliges me with doing tricks and stuff like that, but he's more of a rock and roll drummer, and he likes to kind of maintain a groove. And I recognized that with Cornbread, and so I just started assimilating to that, because I wanted to write stuff that we all enjoyed together. And I started getting into that idea. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. So I think the best examples are songs like Mama I'm Swollen, which is just like a really, especially for cursive for us, it's really vibey, you know, it's like, yeah. It just kind of like it's more about, I don't even know if there are tricks, you know, quote unquote tricks in that song. It's more about just being about vibing out and just like a real mood, like setting a real mood. And I think that's great. I wouldn't do album after album of that, but I love that Mama I'm Swollen is an album in our catalog and in my greater catalog that takes that approach. I think it's awesome. And Cornbread is such a major factor in that.
When you're writing these songs and then you record them, were there any that surprised you either way? Like maybe a song you thought might've been a throwaway, then after you kind of heard it with all the polish on it and Ted's parts, you go, oh shit, there was more here, or one you thought for sure was going to make it. And then maybe you didn't love as much after you got the final product.
Coincidentally, the Let Me Up is a good example of that. Let Me Up's a really unusual, clearly a deep cut track that just came together so well and just like really exceeded its potential to us. And we never would have chosen it as a single, but I think that we, if I'm remembering, actually I do know that Evan Glodell directed a video for Let Me Up, and so it kind of ended up being our third single. But it really had more to do with his choosing. He was listening to the record.
Oh, okay.
He wanted to do a video, and he responded to that one. But it ended up being, you know, it made sense to us. I think it kind of made sense to me too, because I wanted to do something counter to Couldn't Love You, which again I thought was a little too heavily single oriented, you know.
Do you ever write for need on an album? Like, do you ever get six or seven songs in and go, oh shit, we don't have an opener or we don't have a closer?
Yeah, great point. I absolutely do that. And there's a lot of different, maybe not a lot, but there's a handful of different needs. And so it might be, and this goes for any moniker of whatever I might be writing. It might just be like, everything's too low key, or it might be nothing's low key, you know, like it's like kind yeah. of just trying to look, step back and see this album as a whole and be like, holy shit, man, you're writing so much of one thing. You can't do that, at least for the way I think that an album should sound. I want it to, I want there to be a certain eclecticism to an album experience. So yeah, absolutely. Generally, I think I'm fortunate that nearly any record I do, something stands out as the album closer, because album closers are really important to me. Album opener,
this one specifically.
Yeah, this was
I think this is one of, I put this up against any album closer.
Hey, thanks.
Across the board.
This is definitely one of, I'm proud of that song, of What Have I Done. It's one of the most, probably the one of the most well received album closers that I've done in my entire catalog. Staying Alive is the biggest album closer that, and I didn't even write that song. So that's actually the song that, yeah, Ted wrote. But that's definitely the biggest album. Well, it's also kind of the biggest album, so, but it has a big close to it. But What Have I Done, I think, is kind of comes in a nice second place, I would say, to that. So.
Now, I know throughout your discography and specifically solo records, you kind of have talked about in other interviews a lot around the time of Game of Monogamy, when that came out, about maybe the fans thinking everything is autobiographical that you write, rather than, you know, just chunks or this isn't me at all, this is just a character, blah, blah, whatever. What Have I Done maybe feels a little more autobiographical than maybe some of that stuff. Do you, looking back at it now, do you feel that song is, you know, representative of where you were at or where you're still at, or is it kind of just a glimpse at that specific time in your life, or is this just a character kind of, you know, making everything grander and larger?
Well, it's, it is very much me. And the stories that I tell in that song are either specifically me, or they are part of the character of me. Without coming off as maybe too pretentious, that's something that I feel like I continue to try to explain to people in interviews, is that it's like, well, no, I am writing autobiographically, and I'm also not. And I get to hide behind what is what is and what isn't. And that's just the way I write. And so there's really nothing deceitful about it. The only thing it's not deceitful for me to withhold, you know, like what's real and what's real and what's not. And the thing is that even when something, I'd want to assuage some people's concerns that, I'm not like a jack off asshole. I'm not going to write about like my dad abusing me and make it sound like it's me, and then be like, oh, it's not. No, that's not actually, that never happened. My dad's he's a great guy, you know, like that. I wouldn't ever do something as obscene as that. And if I ever am, if I ever am telling things that are so tangential to my own life or so far flung from my own life, I'm hoping that it's clear enough that I'm creating a character, whether it be like a little girl or, you know, like, it's clearly not me. But yeah, I mean, I connect to every story. I'll use What Have I Done as an example. One of the verses is a specific time, is a specific experience in my life. And another another verse in that song is specifically a daydream that I've had about my life. So it is also me, but it's also kind of the character of me, you know, I mean, it's, so I don't know.
Where's your head at in that period between when the album is recorded, the masters are done, it's off at the pressing plant, but it hasn't come out yet? Are you generally excited for people to hear it? Do you start second guessing things? Is it a roller coaster for you, or is it just kind of, well, we've got work to do, we've got a tour cycle to plan, we just got to go and play it no matter how people feel about
it? That's a good discussion to have. It's exciting, but it's a little nerve-wracking. It can be a little bit upsetting. I don't mean just like if it's not well received, then therefore it's upsetting. I mean, it's like prior to anything happening, it can cause upset, you know, because you can just get too worked up about everything that's going on. I can get too worked up and then find that I'm spoiling the experience. I'm certainly not very good at just being, you know, giddy about it all the time. But I do have a moment, you know, I do have peaks and valleys. And in the peaks, I do, I will exhibit, you know, great joy about the excitement of knowing that people will be hearing the record soon.
Do you have specific people that you give records to and anticipate, you know, an honest opinion from? Do you have people you kind of lean on in your life in that way?
You know, I wish, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to have that, but I kind of don't. You know, I feel like Connor Oberst has kind of tried that relationship a little bit, but ultimately I think, you know, him and myself and like all of us, we're just a little too sensitive and a little too precious. And once it's done, it's done. And so if you're going to tell me it's not that good, it's just like, well, that kind of just doesn't feel great. You know, like,
that's a fair point. Because I purposely, it, you know, yeah, I purposely give songs to my wife because I know she'll shoot it straight. Mm. And she's, you know, and she doesn't really listen to the kind of music I make. So it's like, okay, what does the average person hear? Mm. And it kind of illuminates things where it's like, oh, fuck, well, I never really thought about that. And I guess that, to be fair, that's more in the demo process.
Yeah, and that's a totally different thing. Yeah, during demos, I do hope that people will, I'm asking people to be straight. And that's kind of an easier process of criticism, because generally what I do and what others, or what other, you know, other friends of mine will do is just ask to rank songs. And so if a song keeps coming, you know, I'll do that with a pool of people. And if a few songs keep coming in around last place, nobody has to say that song sucks.
Right.
You know, you recognize that's like the song's not hitting as well as the other ones are.
So when this album comes out in 2009, I think it's spring of 2009. Do you remember March 10th, 2009. Do you remember the response? Like, did anything change about the shows? People really into it? Do you remember critical response versus fan response?
Not a ton. But we did do Letterman with From the Hips, and that was surprised us. That was our only time doing late night television. It's kind of, My Mom is Swollen as an album might be the best album example I've had in my career of the effects of just one single, you know, of a powerful single. Cause From the Hips really kind of, it really seemed like it buoyed that album somewhat, which I find kind of interesting and surprising. I mean, Happy Hollow, I guess, you know, it did have it had some it had a had a couple strong singles as well. But yeah, that's something that I recall that I noticed and that I found interesting. But you know, it was, I think that by the time that we did, we're doing Mama, I'm Swollen, we were settling into, and I mean this in a positive way, we're settling into more of the niche audience that we have to this day versus was Ugly Organ and Happy Hollow. It was like all of this growth and expanding and finding all these new listeners. And I think, yeah, by Mom, Mom, Swollen, it was more about like, all right, this is, you know, like, let's all settle in and we'll keep doing records and hopefully you'll be considered enough to keep checking out these records. And, you know,
do you have a preference then when you finish, you do something like Mom, I'm Swollen, you do a pretty heavy touring cycle. I think you guys played, from what I could find online, almost 100 shows that year, just that year alone in 2019. So the album comes out in March, you go pretty much solid to December. Yeah. When does the idea in your mind start floating around of doing solo albums? Like, when are you in California right now? Is that where you are? Mm-hmm. LA?
Yeah.
When did that move come along and what year?
Well, actually, coincidentally, I lived in LA when I was doing Mom, I'm Swollen.
Okay. So was that early?
Well, but then I moved again. I've lived quite a few different places since. Okay. But one of the places I lived was LA. And I did kind of Help Wanted Nights in Mama I'm Swollen are kind of LA records-ish records to me. I actually did most of Help Wanted Nights in Omaha, but then I moved to LA for the touring of Help Wanted Nights. But Mama I'm Swollen, yeah, like I wrote it. I think it's an LA record in my head because that's where I wrote it. But then I moved, and I did move to a few different places, and I'm back out in LA again.
This album comes out and you guys are happy to lean into your audience. And whereas I feel like this is really when we start, maybe some people can argue, you know, throughout The Good Life, it was kind of another outlet for you. But then, you know, years later, we're getting Good Life, Cursive, and solo stuff coming out at the same time. Was it a lot to do with you were just on your own in LA versus the rest of the band, or was it just you wanted another outlet?
It was a little bit of a, It was kind of a logistical thing, and not entirely pleasant. Not to get into anything too negative, but The Good Life started as a solo project for me, aside from Cursive. But then I picked up good friends and we became a band. Then I did move. So to your point, I did move out to LA and I lobbed out the idea of, all right, I think I'm going to move on with Good Life now. But the Good Life band didn't really take a shine to that. They didn't really, you know, because we had become a band and they'd all put a lot into it. They kind of gave up their lives to be a part of it. And I respect any bandmates in that regard, you know. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just start going under my own name then. And that's kind of why I did it. So I know, because it is a little bit silly that I have all these different projects, but it was kind of a logistical thing. But why did Good Life come back around? It's like, because we're all really close friends. And it took me a few years, and maybe it took all of us a few years to kind of recognize, but I'll speak for myself, that it was nice to come back around and be like, okay, let's do The Good Life as a band. Like, we're a band. Let's do a band album. And it'll be different than my solo stuff because it'll have them, you know, it'll have their influence all over it. So,
and then when did the idea for 15 Passenger come around?
That's something that, you know, Matt specifically, and I'd say that, you know, Matt and Ted, so Matt McGinn worked at Saddle Creek, worked for Saddle Creek for a handful of years. And then he left Saddle Creek to run Team Love, which was Connor's label that he branched off. And so it's just something that Matt knows how to do. And he, for a lot of years, just kind of felt like, Saddle Creek was a collective, like it was our label. And over the years, Saddle Creek, in a very cool way, exploded, and that was great. But it became not our label. It became Saddle Creek. It became it was no longer like a collective thing. It became too big for that. And it was just kind of a bit on Matt's mind for a long time to be like, why wouldn't we just do it ourselves again? That's the way we did it to begin with. So that's what 15 Passenger is. It's not really, there's not like any, nothing real nefarious or anything. It's just kind of the way that Matt, he's good at stuff like that. And it's, I think it means more to him. He likes running businesses and he's great at it. It's been cool for us too. We weren't really sure Ted and I, we weren't sure if we were going to, how much of it we were going to expand as a label. And we're still not sure. It's tough, especially when the pandemic hit. But at the very least, it's a safe place for our catalog. So that was the point of it. Initially, that was why we were doing it, was just to have a safe, to have a place that where we were running our own catalog. But it kind of excited us too, and it got us into redoing records again. So,
yeah, the reissues were great, and then Vitriola and Get Fixed. It was cool to see it out on your own kind of thing. Did you now with this, you know, this pandemic stuff? Are you guys, whether it's Cursive or Good Life or yourself, are you now been sitting on stuff? Did you do recording, or was there stuff that was maybe going to come out last year that didn't because touring was so uncertain?
Yeah. It's really frustrating. And it was frustrating to watch my friends put records out and really have to struggle with it. I chose not to release anything because I didn't want to struggle with it. I'm also just on a far smaller level in this business that I can't really, for me to release an album and not tour on it is kind of just like pissing into the void. I mean, it's just, I could just as well give the album away for free. Like, why even sell it at all? Cause I don't really see much money from albums at this point anyway. Not like any woe is me thing. It's just kind of like, that's just kind of like the way it is, with, you know, with the way Spotify works and just with like, you know, just like, you know, it, even, I mean, it's crazy, like really, really successful records right now sell like 10,000 copies, and that's just not a lot, you know? I have a solo record that I would have released, you know, last fall. And instead I just kind of spent time with it. And I've recently mixed it. I haven't mastered it yet. And probably release it now at this point next year. Isn't that crazy? Like, what a weird, it really is. Like I've lost like over a year easily.
Well, that's what I think about, especially when you're talking about having all these songs and over-examining things now. Did sitting on this stuff for that long make it worse, do you think? Did you purposely put off mixing it, or was it just when things started to look like, hey, touring might be coming back, then it was like, okay, let's get this going?
You know, it wasn't really either of those things. It was just, I knew there was no rush, there was zero deadline. And so I didn't just take my time with it. I actually, picked it up and set it down a few times. Like I had other things I've been working on that kind of would take precedent. I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, and again, just knowing that there was zero hurry to get this, to get my next record done. I ended up just, you know, I mean, like I say, I'm still not finished with it. I mean, you know, like, so, I mean, as in like, I still need to master it. I need to do the artwork for it, but it doesn't matter. There's no rush.
Is writing, I assume writing music, touring stuff is still your main gig. Is there other things you do as well? Like the film side, the screenwriting, are you always kind of working on that? Does it ever aid your, is it nice to kind of step away from songwriting every now and then, do something else?
Yeah, I love it. So I write screenplays a decent amount. I have I have a script specific. I have a script with a production company right now that we've been. It's just been kind of a, it's just the business is a pain in the ass, but it's just, we've been, you know, just kind of plugging away at it and trying to get, so yes. So I have a script that's been struggling to get into production for probably close to a year now. Jeez. Or yeah, it's been like half a year, I guess. It's all, but that's cool. It's nice to have, it's nice that it has a home and that it's, you know, that it has people fighting for it. So that's good. That's not usually the case for me. I'm usually kind of like on my own trying to, like, that again, that movie I made, I did it on my own. So, I actually have enough scripts kind of stockpiled that I love to write, and I'm going to be starting up one again soon, but I also discourage it a little bit because I have plenty, you know, like if you already have like, you know, 8 albums that, you know, it's like, well, why don't write another one? Just put one of them out or something, you know, but, albums are different because I can just put them out myself. So
I think that's just a nice way to kind of wrap up the idea of this album, which may come across and I think is dark, heavy, kind of everything, but it's kind of nice to just see the other side now.
Oh yeah. Nice.
A little bit. Anyways, I just want to thank you, Tim, so much for doing this.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
This was really cool for me, especially Cursive is one of my all-time favorites.
Oh,
this was a lot of fun for me, so thanks again. And that wraps the first episode of That One Record. Thanks for tuning in to hear Tim Kasher of Cursive talk about 2009's Mama, I'm Swollen. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, please tell a friend, all that kind of stuff. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever. I do appreciate everyone who listened, and I hope that if you haven't given Mama, I'm Swollen a real shot, that you may choose to do so now. We got lots more episodes coming. I have a couple in the bank. We've got the Flatliners, we've got the Sidekicks, we got the Menzingers, we got Drug Church coming. So stay tuned for those. And any comments, suggestions, you can find us on all the social media stuff. That One Record. I'm Kyle Cresce, and until next time.